Stay tuned for the Dirtbag right after this.
Help us celebrate the 10-year anniversary of the Confessional Radio Show with Contessa de la Luna. We have performances by Contessa de la Luna herself, Remy Fasolatido, Mike Crenshaw, and many more. We have plenty of audience participation, including Human Shadow Puppet Theater, Animal Impersonation Contests, and prizes, prizes, prizes. And don't miss our David Bowie Kazoo Tribute. All that and more, Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Tickets are $10 for an entire night of music, mayhem, laughs, and surprises. All proceeds benefit KABU Community Radio. Tickets available now in advance at brownpapertickets.com or at the door. Join us Thursday, February 11th, 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. See you there.
This program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. And also by One Green World, a local nursery offering hard-to-find fruiting plants designed to help you grow your own food and decorate your yard, deck, or patio. To order plants from their 2015 color catalog, their website is onegreenworld.com, or you can reach them by phone at 1-877-353-4028.
Well, good morning. We've reached the second Wednesday of the month at 11 o'clock. It's time for the Dirtbag. Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. In the studio with me is my hearty perennial guest, Jim. I called him on our blurb. What did I say? Somewhat perennial. Right. Well, you mostly are here.
Consistently perennial.
Yeah, jump up on that mic there, Jim. You're too far away from it. Yeah, there we go. Also, sitting across from me is Marisha Auerbach.
Auerbach.
Who is here to talk about many things. In fact, a lot of things. And we've got, how long do you have here with us? The whole hour if you need?
Yeah,
if we need.
Whole hour.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So, okay, she's jumping right on that there, too. And we'll talk about her experience as a gardener and permaculture gardening in small spaces. I think that might be of interest for city dwellers. And boy, I tell you, the spaces are getting smaller and smaller these days for home gardens, at least if you're buying a new home. We have got the garden stumper at half past the hour. Jim came up with a doozy. We've got tickets to give away too, but I don't think we're going to tie it to that because we only have an hour. It's a good one though. But yes, we have tickets to the Hollywood Theater, the Eco Film series or film that they're showing tomorrow. I'll get more information on that shortly. But it's tomorrow, Thursday, 7:30, and we'll have free tickets to that. So just stay tuned for that. We'll give you a number to call, and if you're the third caller, we'll do that. We will also be talking about pruning grapes and just kind of a pruner primer. How's that?
That's good. I like it.
Yeah. Hey, is Jim's mic up far enough?
Yeah, it is.
He thinks. Okay, we're going to get Jim right on top of things here. And our plant of the month, Marisha, is going to take that over today to talk about something that we have not talked about, perennial vegetables, just in general. And I listed a few there in specific, but it's can be a mainstay of permaculture garden and any garden for that matter. So first of all, we'll talk about events. Jim, you got anything?
Well, we should always be paying attention to the upcoming spring propagation fair. I noticed you mentioned the Yard, Garden, and Patio show, and I actually don't know the date of that. But
that's this weekend.
That's this weekend.
Yeah, you're not Mike, Jim, so we're going to do something about that. What do you want to do for that? We want him to move around over this way? I'll talk about the Yard, Garden, and Patio show. You move around over here to this, okay. This mic over here. Maybe that's better. Jim, you're not part of the Yard, Garden, and Patio show anymore. I mean, as far as the speakership or any ship.
Any ship. The ship has sailed to a different port.
For that matter. Okay, the blue mic's out. And this one looks like it might be doing better. But I will be at the Yard, Garden, and Patio show this weekend talking about two types of bees that you can attract to your yard, the native mason bee and the non-native honeybee. And just kind of what it takes to get involved with that. And while there's a charge for the Yard, Garden, and Patio show, you can actually go to the seminars for not.
They're out there in the lobby, right?
That's right.
You get into the convention center and take advantage of that.
That's right.
That's a great idea.
And, okay, so that's coming up. And then the Home Orchard Society will have the
Fruit Propagation Fair. That's in March 20th. So
we'll still have another show
before that. But people should keep in mind, we can talk about that a little later, about collecting cyanwood so they can be prepared for that show.
Yes. And it's still a good time to do that.
Yes. But you don't want to wait too long.
No.
Not with the warm weather we just had.
No, grapes are kind of budding a little bit. So that's why I want to talk about grapes now. And Marisha has a series of gardening classes that you hold at Peoples.
Yes. We started it last night, and it's a five-class series right now. It actually goes for 10 classes, but people can sign up till June, and then we'll do registration again for July through November. So it's a once-a-month gardening series on what to do now in the garden. It's very helpful for people who haven't been gardening for years to get that sense of the wheel of the year, just 1 month, bite-sized chunks at a time of what to do right now. And we talk about what to do in the vegetable garden and with fruit trees and berry bushes and even inoculating mushrooms and medicinal herbs. And each month has a specific theme that goes along with the general what to do now.
That's held at Peoples?
At Peoples Food Co-op, yes. And it's the fifth year we've been doing the series.
And one registers for that or shows up, or how does that work?
One registers in advance. We had 40 people last night, which is probably about the max of the community room there. So it's good to know how many people to expect. There's also some extensive handouts that I give out. So good to know how many to make copies of. And then we also do a once a month garden tour at my house in the Woodstock neighborhood. So my students and others who want to drop in can see what's going on in real time outside.
And is there a charge for this?
The workshop series is $100 for five classes or $25 a class. And there's a discount for People's Food Co-op members for the tours, and they're just donation.
Uh-huh.
And then they're probably going to coincide with a plant sale as well in the springtime.
And one would get in touch through Peoples or through you? Or
the best way to get in touch about any of my upcoming events is on my website, which is permaculturerising.com.
Okay. Jim, you got all that?
Yes, absolutely. I'm listening intently.
Okay.
I actually remember Peoples from when long, many years ago, I was pretty young. Peoples just started. So it's pretty neat to go there and see how it's improved and grown.
It's a really great pairing for the workshop series, since people can get their plant starts, they can get seeds there. There's all sorts of supplies. And Peoples is just such a great co-op that really supports the community.
I didn't even know you had a room that would hold 40 people.
Yeah, they have free yoga classes there for People Food Co-op members.
Maybe almost enough to move to Portland.
Yeah, right, Jim.
Can't grow too many trees on a city lot. I think we've maxed it out in ours with 18 trees, but oh, I think you probably have a lot more going on.
I've got about 40, but most of those are espaliered. The apples and pears are espaliered, so you can get a lot of variety in a small space.
That's right.
Speaking of small space, I had a query from actually another host here at the KBOO about cherry trees. Where's that? You have the...
Yeah.
What did he say here? This is from Wayne. He said he has room for a cherry tree. He might have to rethink that, but... And he's looking for certain, apparently, self-fertile trees. And that's a good way to go in the city. Although in the city, boy, we've got enough cherry trees probably that's going to... You shouldn't have to worry too much about
pollination
there. Yeah. Right. But he's talking about... Black Gold, Craig's Crimson, Sweetheart, Stella. Stella's always pops out in my mind as a fine, dark.
Yeah. Stella has done well for us. I mean, it's pretty reliable, and we get crops every year on it. Lappin's is another one that I've liked over the years as a self-fertile one. The interesting thing with cherries, in my experience so far, is that there's dwarfing rootstocks out there, but cherries being prunus, they're fairly susceptible to bacterial canker, and I've found that the more vigorous trees will actually grow better than if you try to make them super dwarf. I mean, dwarfing is so appealing, but then darn, you got to deal with the disease issues. So we typically use a rootstock called Colt, which is just a slightly less than full size tree. But with pruning, you can keep them small. And I know you have your own chainsaw technique.
Well, this is the Spanish bush method. Are you familiar with that?
No.
Marisha, it's really only effective for cherries. Well, there might be some other esoteric trees, but it's not going to work on an apple where. This is what Ted taught me. Ted Swenson, longtime home orchardist and botanist in the area. And he says, yeah, just go out and chainsaw it about knee level. Go out and kneecap it. And so I did, because of this tree that, the literature, this was on Gisela 5, I think, this rootstock that's at the time was reported to be pretty small, or relatively small, but with cherries, there isn't anything small. And squirrels were jumping off the top of my house onto the tree, and so it was too tall. So I kneecapped it at knees. I went out there and stood next to it, and then you take over the pruning from there, because it'll send out scaffolding branches from below the cut. Not really above the cut.
Lots of branches.
Yeah, but you would prune to four, mm-hmm. essentially, and then the protocol is. There's ways to keep it short. You get new branches, but then you just cut them back except for about an inch or so. And, boy, it's worked. I mean, I get cherries when the squirrels haven't found them.
But do you do anything on that big pruning cut? Paint it with anything, or do you?
No, did not do that. Mm-hmm. And that's something that we'll talk about in our pruning primer. Yes, no type thing. Mm-hmm. So, well, anyway... The advice that I gave him was to, no matter what you get, to consider the Spanish bush method. And then I also heard from Tanya, who's the manager at the Home Orchard Arboretum at Clackamas Community College. And she agreed that said she's in the process of getting rid of all of our cherries, mm-hmm. the Home Orchard Society, and will sterilize, burn the ground. Is that for this bacteria, do you think? I didn't understand that
sure
part.
I'm not sure why she'd be doing that. No.
Some pyromaniac.
Don't know.
She's just so heartbroken. I mean, she's from Michigan, and she loves her cherries. They're like her favorite crop.
Well, if and when she decides to plant them, then she would take these steps to get the ground ready. Mm-hmm. All right, well, that's a little bit on cherries. And think about it, but they're pretty good.
They're pretty good, yeah. And the last couple of years, we've had pretty good crops.
Yeah, and it's just been warm and dry, and that keeps those bacteria at bay.
That's right.
Well, let's move on to the plants of the month here, if you will, or just the type of plant, these perennial veggies.
Yeah.
And you had mentioned, we'd mentioned some of my list here. Let's see. Lovage, nettles, walking onions, and horseradish is ones that you mentioned, but there's others.
Yeah, there's a lot of other perennial vegetables. Asparagus is probably one of the most common.
True.
Although it's a bit difficult for many people to, for novice gardeners to grow out here because it likes alkaline soils. So that's one thing to keep in mind if people are trying to grow asparagus. It also doesn't like the wet that we get all winter long. It likes a moderate amount of rainfall every month of the year. So I actually have my asparagus under the eaves of my house so that it doesn't get as much rainfall in the winter, and added some calcium and lime to that. Rhubarb is also a well-known perennial that many people grow. It's very prolific. Lovage is my favorite perennial vegetable. It's a beautiful celery-like perennial that you eat the young shoots. I love putting it in risotto. And it's available in the spring. And then once it's done producing those leafy shoots, then it flowers. And the flowers are quite tall. And I like using them in bouquets. And they're nice for attracting beneficial insects as well.
How much space would you give lovage? I mean, since it's a perennial, it'll die back. And then...
Yeah, you can't see it right now.
Right. And then you have the tendency, maybe, oh, I could put something in here, tuck something in here. But then the lovage comes out and...
Yeah, I remember it's there because it's one of my favorite things when it's available.
Well, how big would the plant get?
Oh, maybe about a
couple feet in diameter? Or,
yeah, I mean, like about, that's about 2 feet.
Yeah, maybe 20 inches, something like that. Okay,
yeah.
All right.
Yeah, and it's really tall, so it can be set back. And so I actually have my lovage set back further in the bed. And I have a perennial vegetables area that has my horseradish and my rhubarb and some French sorrel mixed in with some strawberries. And so then I can reach further in for the lovage and then get the greens along the edges of the sorrel and other
okay.
things.
What about horseradish? How much space should we allot to that?
Well, I just give horseradish about the same, you know, between 18 inches to 2 feet, and I harvest it every year. And that's how you prevent the horseradish from spreading, is you need to harvest it. So I give it a certain amount of space, and as it expands, that's what gets harvested.
So this is a root.
It's a root that you eat.
I don't know if it's technically a root, but I suppose it is. I mean, it could be a rhizome or a...
The root's the edible part of the plant. Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
And it's pretty considerable, so it's got a pretty bad reputation for spreading. But I've been amazed that I just can't seem to keep horseradish in my nursery. People love buying it here in Portland. I've sold it at the farmer's market with my vegetable starts nursery, and it's pretty popular. Horseradish sauce is really yummy. You blend up the root in the food processor with some vinegar, and depending on how quickly you add the vinegar, depends on how hot your horseradish will be.
I should mention that several of my tunes today have to do with veggies. How about that?
That's how convenient.
Yes. How did that happen? Okay, walking onions. You talked about, you mentioned those.
Yeah, the Egyptian walking onions is a perennial top-setting onion, and you can eat the young shoots like chives or like green onions. You can also eat the bulbs, which set on the top of the stalks, and so you don't have to dig to take them out of there. You just break off a bulb and cut it in half and peel off the outer papery layer like you do with onions, and you can saute them up just like that.
I've never grown them. Are they similar, and are they the same as onion? I mean, can you use them in the same?
You can use them in the same way. Yeah, use them more like green onions since they're not as substantial as the bulb of regular onion. But I find they're really easy to grow. And while they're called walking onions because the bulbs walk along the ground. If you don't harvest them, they'll fall on the ground and they'll root and they'll walk through your garden. So sometimes I'll break off the bulbs and just throw them in the air to let them grow somewhere else in the garden at random, wherever they fall. And I tend to call it my allium of the moment is what I harvest for food. It's whatever perennial allium I have available. Onions can be very finicky in our climate, but not so much with some of these perennial onion relatives. So there's the Egyptian walking onion. There's also the perennial Welsh onion. And then I grow chives and garlic chives. All are perennial onion relatives.
Okay. Well, let's take a stab at this music here, and I chose the walking onion part of this is a Sue Foley blues called. Are you ready in there? Yeah, she gives me a thumb up. I got my second ace engineer in there today. Got to keep moving, just like those onions do. Well, okay, we got to keep moving on the show here then.
That's right. We could sing the song ourselves, but I don't know the words to it. So.
Yeah. Just open up the folder, and then we'll find the file. Okay, well, we'll move on here then. Let's...
Can I add about one more?
Oh, really, you bet. Yeah, you bet.
One? I just wanted to mention the stinging nettle as really fabulous perennial vegetable, because now is the time. And I find often people forget that now's the time because it's so early. But they're beautiful right now. They're just a couple inches above the ground, really robust, which is the perfect time for harvesting stinging nettles. I use stinging nettles just like kale or chard. I'll saute them. And once you cook them, they lose the sting. And they're wonderful in any meal, just like you'd use kale or some other braising green.
And when do you stop, or do you stop harvesting them because they're too whatever?
Absolutely. I like my nettles young and fresh, and once they get to knee height, I absolutely stop harvesting them. At that point, they're said to accumulate some compounds that are toxic for the kidneys, and so it's important to know that you need to not harvest nettles once they're above your knee.
Yeah.
And do as high as your cherry tree.
And do you wear gloves?
I don't wear gloves.
stinging nettles are named for good reason.
Yeah, yeah.
And boy, once you get one of those, it's worse than a bee sting.
So when you harvest them, you just do it barehanded, no problem?
I tend to pick them up with my pruners. Sometimes, not like, grabbing them.
Right.
But when I used to do forestry work on the farm I lived at in Southwest Washington, I certainly gathered an immunity to the nettle and wouldn't get stung. Could jump in patches of them and get stung. They're also the sting is really good for arthritis too. So for any aspiring herbalists out there, you can use the leaves in a salve, and it's a great treatment for arthritis.
It's not like bee sting therapy, apparently.
The sting goes away in the salve. Yeah.
Okay, now we're ready to try the Sue Foley thing. You got to keep moving here. Okay, that was our Stumper theme there. So we might as well go for the Stumper now. Jim, you want to tackle that one here?
Sure, because I really like this plant. I actually lived, when I started the nursery back in the day, I lived on a farm, a piece of ground up in the Cascade foothills above Hood River, where this particular plant was beautiful. I mean, it was like the examples of it were quite spectacular. So the Stumper is, and what native evergreen tree is a relative of chestnut and grows in the Cascade Mountains?
Yes, and really, this is the only place that it grows. I mean, in the West, Washington to Northern California ish.
Yep, and it bears edible nuts.
Oh, a hint!
It's relative of chestnut.
Well, I guess so. Yeah. Okay, if you know the answer to that question, or if you want to take a guess, 503-231-8187. Now stay tuned, because we're also going to have these tickets to give away to the Eco Film Festival, and the film is called, I don't know how to pronounce this, Sunu, S-U-N-U with a accent mark over the U. It's Sunu profiles Mexican maize farmers' efforts to protect their native seed and its agricultural, spiritual, and cultural importance from the pressures of government import policies, Monsanto, and global economies. Or excuse me. Yeah. It says global economics, but maybe that's right too. But that's not what we're not going to give that away yet. But the native evergreen tree is a relative of the chestnut. Yep. It grows native here in the Cascades.
The Cascade Mountains.
All right. 503-231-8187 if you know the answer to that, or if you have a question for any of us here. Okay, we'll talk to Paul then. Good morning, Paul. You're with the Dirtbag.
Hey, I didn't didn't have a question or anything. I just had a tip on the stinging nettle.
Okay.
If you get stung with it, dock or curly dock usually grows around the same area. And if you mush that up and rub it on you where you got stung, it'll neutralize the sting.
Uh-huh.
Comes in real handy. And it does work for arthritis. I just rub my knuckles through it as I'm walking along.
The nettles?
Get stung on the nettles, and it makes my knuckles feel better for about 4 days.
You can't feel diddly, me.
If you get too much, just rub a little dock on it, and you'll be
right.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
You bet. Thanks for the comment. Have you ever had that, Marisha?
Yeah, I've known that dock will do that. You can also use the fronds of the sword fern. The spores on the bottom of the sword fern leaves is also a good anecdote for nettle stings.
Makes me want to go out and get stung and then try it.
Well,
no, it doesn't.
I always used to say, it was nettle in, dock out, dock in, nettle out.
You used to say that?
It was a little saying came back in the day.
When you were getting stung.
Before I got stung. After I got stung, that's right.
Right. Okay. We're going to try. Okay, John, you got a question or an answer?
Well, I think that would only provide a meal for a chipmunk, but I believe it's the chinkapin.
Is that right?
I can't hear.
You don't have your mic on there. Yeah,
he's right.
It is there,
he
right.
He said the chinkapin.
Let's see if we can get this one down there for you. Yes, Jim will do that. Yes, that is exactly right. Chrysalopus?
Thanks.
Chrysalopus.
It's a difficult name, isn't
the
it?
The giant chinkapin, yes.
Yeah, I think it actually had a different name before and was renamed this one in some recent times. But it was a beautiful tree and unusual, too, because it's evergreen.
And now was it John? Is that what the caller's name is?
That's correct.
John, why did you say it would only be a small handful or a meal or something like that?
Oh, I said it would be a meal for a chipmunk. Yeah, because... I know those nets, and I think the largest I've ever found would be, I don't know.
Smaller than a chestnut?
Like a quarter inch or 3/8 of an inch.
Oh, that's
tiny, tiny little nut.
Like a chickpea.
Yeah. Oh, at the most.
Yeah.
Yeah, there'll be several in one of the little burrs. But.
And it's usually hard to find them because the squirrels get to them. There's also seems to be some kind of worm that eats them. And whenever I can find enough of them, I'm really thrilled because they're usually just not around.
No, it's a favorite tree. I love it. Love it.
Makes me wonder why they named it the giant chickapin. Maybe it's the size of the tree.
It is the size of the tree. There's a shrub form. Apparently, they've distinguished the two. In California, there's more of a shrub form, and they call it something like that. I can't remember the name exactly, but
shrimp.
But what is my prize? Do I get your voice on my answering machine?
Sure, you want it.
You get to listen to the Dirtbag,
right.
Free of charge.
Well done, John.
All right, thank you. Bye.
You bet. Okay, and that's not grown commercially, or apparently they're so small of nuts that it's hardly worth it.
It isn't really grown. It's not grown at all that I know of.
Or gathered, even.
And gathering, probably Native Americans did it. I'm sure there was food value there, but not enough to. The problem is really just very few years do you get a crop. I mean, I can remember the years when there's been enough. I don't know what would cause that, weather conditions or the squirrels were busy elsewhere or something, but we would get a bunch of nuts, and then for years we wouldn't.
Well, I apologize ahead of time because I probably have incomplete information here, but I understand that the city is considering maybe putting the horse chestnut on a nuisance plant list. Have you heard that?
I haven't heard that.
Just the horse chestnut.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, we as beekeepers, chestnut is a great source of pollen and nectar.
Horse chestnut.
All types of chestnuts, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. I'll bet you even the giant chinkapin.
Yeah. And horse chestnut's quite different from regular chestnut.
As far as edibility?
Yeah.
It's not edible.
It's not really that closely related. It's just...
That's true. It's a different...
Name.
Right.
Different genus.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But still, the blooms, which are completely different, but they're still attractive. We see pollinators on them all.
Mm-hmm.
So, and
they're prolific, blooms.
Right. Yeah. I think that's probably one of the problems is that you
it's
get a lot, well, is that they you know, they can be weedy in the right area, but in the city, I don't know.
Maybe because of the drop of the nut that they're considered, or not. Not edible, but
yeah. That's why I say I have incomplete information here. Yeah. But I'm assuming it's just because when we say it's a weed, so it spreads, not that it's the droppings. Although you know those husks can be.
Yeah, you know, I would be sharp. Right. I mean, I would consider the regular chestnut. They should ban that for anybody that's walking barefoot.
Yeah, the Darwin Award will take that. Yes, we're going to do that. Okay, well, we've got, we can, let's move on here to our pruning primer and grapes, but let's take a break here. And I wanted to play the old, Jim, this is probably in your heyday in the 60s even. This is an old thing called the horse. This is in honor of the horseradish that we talked about. So
All right. Let's
try this one here. Mm-hmm. There we go. There's a bit of controversy as to who really performed that first, the horse there, but Chris Nobles is the one who gets the credit today.
Okay.
Well, we were having a discussion here on chestnuts, and maybe we need to make the chestnut next month's plant of the month. Well, find out. We'll just talk more about it.
Sure.
Okay.
Sounds good to me.
And I'll find out why, you know, what I've been hearing about that they're, the ones that they're planting now are a cross. You ask that at Friends of Trees because they will know because that's sometimes they've had that in their inventory.
All right,
I believe that. So, okay, David, you're with the dirt bag. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. So I hope this is not too far off track, but I'm wanting to plant some fruit trees, some unusual apple varieties in particular that I found at the All About Fruit show that you turned me on to.
Great.
And but I was I'm a little confused about my options because I was going to try to. I guess a simple thing would have been just to order what I liked from the Home Orchard Society, but I was encouraged to look around to try to find bigger plants.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I would not like to plant three more apple trees if I can get it, but I'd rather have them grafted, at least one grafted onto another. And I'm way in over my head technically. And every time I call a nursery, exactly, I wind up with someone who's semi-knowledgeable.
Mm.
And so I wind up with, you know, at best contradictory advice. you know.
Well, we're never short of opinions here on what you should do.
Okay. So the my favorite ones were the Belle de Bosse Coupe, the Callaway Crab Apple, and the King's Acre Bountiful.
Okay.
And I can the only one that's available locally now is the Callaway Crab Apple. I could go get a bare root tree out of the One Green World any day and have someone stick that in the ground.
And would you be eating these crab apples?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
They're delicious.
Okay.
Yeah, Callaway's a good crab apple.
All right.
So my thoughts about this issue: if you want to make a combination apple,
the multiple graft,
put more than one on one tree, and you want those specific varieties, what one possibility would be to buy a branched bare root tree that already has branches. Like, it could be really any variety, but if you could, one that you might like to have, one of those other ones as well. You're probably, none of those except Callaway would be available, and Callaway is probably not going to make a really good branch tree for grafting onto, but there are some other varieties that would, if they had, for example, if you had two branches and a top, you could use each one of those to graft the varieties you want onto them, and so that would give you a head start. Because otherwise, you'd have to grow a tree for another year to get branches on it so that you could have something to graft onto.
David, is it David?
Yeah. And I think that's what the Home Orchard Society was suggesting to me, look around for something bigger. But and that it already had branches. So any tree I could get in the ground that had branches in it.
Well, are you interested in learning grafting, the craft of grafting?
I'm probably going to get someone in to help me, you know,
right,
with this.
Right.
So what you theoretically could do is, if you got this bare root tree and you took it to the pre-spring propagation fair, which
right.
is on March 20th, take that bare root tree there and you'll make some waves because people look at you and think, wow, that's pretty cool. I got a bare root tree and you got one in your hand. And you go up and down the aisle and you find the varieties, the cyanwood of the varieties that you want. And there at this fair will be people that will help you graft it. And you could actually graft the bare root tree on site, then take it home and plant it. And apples are pretty good about growing in that kind of condition. They should work.
So that's not too late in the season to plant a bare root tree?
No. Although he could even pot it if...
You could certainly put it in a pot. If you were to buy the tree now, March 20th is getting a little warm.
Late, yeah.
Pretty late. So so potting is probably not a bad idea if you're going to actually do what I was suggesting, actually physically take the tree there, because you could get it grafted. You put it in
right.
a pot, and then it would be, the roots
pot
would
pot
be.
Pot it and then plant it next fall, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. But maybe I'll go get a Callaway crab apple, because I know I want one of those. Plant that tree. And then I'll get something to graft the other two on, or I could graft all three onto one tree if I wanted, I guess.
The latter.
Yeah, the Callaway is a different form. I would not probably use Callaway in that regard because it's not as vigorous a plant, and I'm afraid you'd be the other varieties would sort of overcome it. So Callaway might be best, and it's a small tree anyway. It's very dwarfing. So you might plant it separately and then use the other one for your other varieties.
So I'll get one of those and plant it now, and then I'll just get a bare root tree to bring to the propagation fair.
Or could he just get the rootstock at the propagation fair and have somebody graft his cyanwood there?
So I don't have to bring anything there?
Well, the problem is they only sell rootstock, so it's a single stem. It doesn't have branches.
Oh, yes, of course.
So so I would suggest, if you wanted to go to One Green World and get the Callaway, ask them if they've got a bare root tree that's dormant that has a decent branch, you know, has two or three branches, so you can use it for grafting. And it doesn't matter what variety it is, since you're just using it as the rootstock, essentially.
But it's got to be apple rootstock. Got to be sure to specify that.
Of course.
Didn't mean to insult you.
Right. But of an older rootstock, so it won't matter, as long as it's the right rootstock for the tree, it doesn't really matter what I graft onto it. That's not compatibility, further compatibility issue. I did see something, though, about a couple things like one, I know the bell of the Bosque group grew in this area, but I had a sort of chart telling me that it's not suitable for this temperature zone. And the other thing is that there's some certain ones are listed as good cross pollinators in particular. So how much regard do I need to do for that?
Are you in the city?
Yeah.
I wouldn't worry too much about the cross pollination or what you need for a pollinizer. I think, you know, it's more important on size to choose your rootstock based upon size rather than any of the other characteristics.
But I'm putting in what I graft onto it, though. I mean, I read the King Edward VII and the King's Acre Bountiful are good cross-pollinators, and King Edward VII is another one on my short list, although it's...
I wouldn't worry about the pollination part. I mean, I don't know anything.
Like, I was saying.
Yeah, the main thing is the tree that you're purchasing to use as the rootstock. The branches should be pencil size, somewhere in that range. Not a real thin branch isn't going to work for the grafting purpose. So you want to have something of
make sure
some
it's suitable
sort.
For grafting. Okay,
right.
I'll have to get that down. Okay,
all right.
That's a good, real good. That's several steps forward. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks for the call and good luck. Maybe we'll see him at the show.
Yeah. I want to see that bare root plant come in there, or in a pot even, you know.
That's right.
It'd be fun. So, and that also might lead us into cyanwood collection.
Yes, but it also leads us into the ticket giveaway.
Oh, of course.
So we're going to do this now, and we're not going to take your call here. That'll have to go to the front desk. And so they are aware of this, I hope, that the third caller will get tickets to tomorrow's showing, Thursday, February 11th at 7:30 at the Hollywood Theater, the Portland Ecofilm Sunu. I don't know. I should have figured that out first. But anyway, the front desk. Call the front desk. Third caller, 503-231-8032. Thank you. 231-8032. Third caller. Okay, so yes, collecting cyanwood. This is the time to do it, or the tail end of the time to do it, because the tree should be totally dormant.
Well, yes.
Maybe not totally, but...
Well, we're depending on where you live, I mean, out in our area, even though it's been warm days, the temperatures at night have been freezing or just above it. So it's been pretty cool, and Portland's probably a little bit ahead of that. The main thing is to get the wood off the tree as soon as possible. If you have a variety that you want to graft, either on rootstock that you're buying or take it to the fruit propagation fair, which we'll talk about that in a moment too, I guess, to go get that wood now. And the kind of wood that people should collect, again, is something in the pencil size range, not something really super fat, and not really thin. And usually the best wood is up in the upper part of the tree, wood that grew last year, a one-year shoot. You know, older wood that's got flower buds on it and spurs and so forth is really not what you want. If you can get that pencil-sized wood, a nice couple of pieces from the upper part of the tree, and then it's important to store it properly because you're going to keep it cold from now until the time you graft it. If you graft it yourself, you could graft almost, well, it's a little early, I would say, for grafting. I'd wait another couple of weeks. So in the meantime, what I do is I'll take just like a regular plastic bag. You can use freezer bags or whatever. Cut the wood into a piece that'll fit in there, 6 to 8 inches long. And I just put a tiny bit of moisture in. I'll take my fingers and dip them in water and toss that water in that bag and seal the bag and put it in the refrigerator.
And sometimes, not sometimes, it's a good practice to make the bottom end of the cyanwood cut a flat cut and the top an angled cut so you know which is up. Because it's, believe it or not, you can get them turned around. Yeah. If they're a symmetrical piece of wood, you still need to have them going in the right direction.
Some are more obvious than others, but that's bud direction. But yeah, it's a great idea. That way you won't make any mistakes by putting the buds upside down on the plant.
Right.
And you want to get them before the buds swell, right?
Right.
Like I noticed this morning that my pear tree in my backyard, the buds have swollen, and so it's a little late already in Southeast Portland where I live to get cyanwood off my pear tree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little bit of swelling is it probably still will work. if it because it's going to take a while for that bud to expand out. In the meantime, if you graft it, the cambium will start to grow. And I've used some wood that's been, you know, already with buds slightly swelling. But if it starts to get significant, then it's going to be too late.
We can change that old adage that the best time to gather scion wood is in December and January, but the second best time is today.
Right.
Right. As long as it's there you go. Before right. February, that's right. Mid-February or yeah. something like that.
Yeah. And apples are later to bud than pears, typically. So you can also gauge it a little bit by the type of tree. Persimmon is much later. Jujube, if anybody wants to gather jujube wood, you got at least another month and a half probably for any sign of growth on that.
Okay, well, let's take our last break here, and then we'll come back and talk more about pruning grapes and just pruning in general. I broke away from the theme here with this next selection in that, Mother, we just can't get enough of this nice weather that we've been having.
That's right.
Something about this rush, take it away, man, it feels so good.
Mother, we just can't get enough. New Radicals. Really a fine, fine album from the 98 or something like that. Well, I'll just give a quick primer on grape pruning, at least how I approach it. Mm-hmm. And then we'll talk about just pruning in general, because this is the time for dormant pruning, or not the time.
It's a good time, right.
I, of course, do virtually all of my fruit tree pruning in the summer, but my trees are established too, so we'll cover that in the summer. With grapes, to take the mystery out of it, in the past I've gone along with the conventional terms and what the experts call this type of cane pruning or spur pruning or something like that, and I'm just going to simplify it here, is that you either start over every year or you use the existing canes. And you can change back and forth between these very easily. And you'll get grapes every year, even if you switch back from getting rid of everything and starting over every year, or just leaving a branch and pruning to that. So keep that in mind. I started out by when the plants got big enough, and that's where I'm going to start this little explanation, in that it might take several years before the grape plant, the cane, grows tall enough to where you can start training it over a trellis where you want it. But it doesn't have to be on a trellis. It can just go around a post or on the, well, probably not on the ground, but it would still produce fruit, but it wouldn't be clean fruit or nice fruit, or because there'd be less air circulation and whatnot. So trellising is generally what we do. So when the first year, obviously you have only one choice, and that is that main cane that's going out over your trellis, we'll say. And it will put out a lot of side growth, and it's from where these side growths are, these little what do you call them, Jim, laterals? Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you have shoots.
Shoots, yeah. And that's where the grapes are going to come from, mm-hmm. not the main trunk. It'll just be off these little side shoots. So the first year, you've got your cane goes out there, all the grapes will be forming, and it will be sending out lots of new growth. And if you're going to choose the method where you're going to have permanent canes, then you would cut off virtually all of the rest of the new growth, but you would keep some. You wouldn't cut it all off, but you would keep it under control is kind of what I'm saying. You wouldn't prune them way back to the main trunk. But I tell you, the varieties that I grow are very vigorous, and they will put out a lot of growth that just gets in the way. And it comes down and hooks onto my clothesline that's underneath it and whatnot. So I just want to get rid of that, those things. Then the next year, the one cane that you chose will remain. So you can strap that to the trellis where you want it. And then this time next year, all these little side growths that have come off of that, you're going to prune those down to one or two buds each. This is these little spurs that are going to be coming out that have one or two buds. And it's from those buds where the lateral growth will come again, and then that's where the fruit will be. So this is kind of what I recommend to do, because you don't have to start over the scaffolding part of the grapes every year. It's you've chosen it, you've anchored it down, and it's just essentially just coming back to where you were before. But if you want to change directions of your grapes, or if you want to change the position of that main scaffold, any year you choose, this time of year, you can cut that out completely and then put in its place one of the new growths from last year. Strap it down to the trellis, and away you go. And you can, like I said, you can go back and forth on this. They're really pretty forgiving. Mm-hmm. I've heard the standard or the rule of thumb is about 50 buds per grape plant, because you just don't want too much there. But I've seen plants with hundreds of buds. So
more buds, more fruit, right?
Yes, but smaller fruit. I mean, it's the same thing with, you know, why you would thin apples or other things there too. So that's grapes in a nutshell, so to speak.
Did we talk about kiwis last week?
We did.
Pruning kiwis?
Mm-hmm. Because that was the good time for that.
Right.
Last year.
Last month.
So. But now pruning in general. Oh, I'm sorry, Jim. I started to cut you off there, but we have these tickets are still available. It's not because we didn't have a winner. It's because the winner couldn't go. So we are opening up the phone lines again. There's just one. So the first caller now at that same number, 503-231-8032, will win a pair of tickets to the Portland Eco Film Festival U.S. premiere of this Sunu.
If they check their calendar.
That's right. That's just tomorrow. Tomorrow at 7:30, Hollywood Theater. Okay, so Jim.
Yeah.
A little pruning.
Well, so I know that there's pruning can get into some, there's a lot of techniques and different things to do. And winter, and you're talking about summer pruning, which is has a different effect on the plant than winter pruning. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of fruit trees out at our place, and so we have to do what we have to, we just do what we can, you know, to try to keep them in good health. And I think for a lot of folks, just basically, I like pruning as an exercise. And in fact, I'll probably have a bumper sticker one of these days. You'll say, I'd rather be pruning. But
you're a rarity, Jim.
Yeah. But, you know, you get a lot of stretching, and it's just really good.
It feels good when you fall off the ladder. And
Well, we try to, that's one of the things, is keeping things down so you don't get on a ladder if you can.
That's my
it.
Policy. That's right. 6 feet. That's right.
Just some basic stuff that I would recommend doing is getting into it. If you've got especially an older tree that hasn't been pruned for a while, get the old wood, you know, the old wood that's tired and it's been in there, it's covered with moss, and so just get some of that out of there, you know, just kind of loosen it up, thin it out, and open it up. That's sort of one of the first things to me to deal with. Any crossing branches, branches that are rubbing on each other.
And you know, you can really do that at any time.
Yes.
I mean, when branches are...
It's a lot easier to see them
diseased
now.
Diseased or crossing, yeah.
Yeah, it's easier to see them in the winter, though. You know, when they're all covered with leaves, it's a little more difficult and a little bit more of a mess when you have to clean it up, too. But, yeah, I mean, that's to me kind of one of the sort of the basic beginning is just clean up the tree so you can see what's there. And if you're starting with a younger tree, heading back branches, I believe, is a good thing at this time of year. Again, Glenn, you may think that the summer pruning part is better, but for a younger tree that you want to get some new growth on, heading them back will encourage more branch formation below the cut where you cut them off at. There's a principle or a concept called apical dominance, which means that the terminal bud on a tree suppresses the growth of the buds below it. So a terminal bud on a branch. So if you look at a branch and the very end bud, if you remove that end bud, then the buds that below that point are now free to grow and will produce more branches and theoretically more fruiting area for the tree.
It's why we, you know, Christmas trees have that Christmas tree shape.
Right. So remove the apical bud and it makes a lot of bushy
branches. Right. But that, you know, we can use that, you know, you don't want to do too much of that because then you'll be getting a lot of new growth below it. So we just need to devote a little more time to this. Yeah. I'd forgotten in my mind that I wanted Marisha to talk about some small space permaculture techniques. So I want to give her that time and we'll come back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, pruning, you know, keeping your, manicuring your trees, like you have a lot of espaliers that makes it possible for you to grow, would you say 20 fruit trees on your lot? 20?
Well, 40.
40.
But I have maybe 20 plus espaliers, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, and how big's your lot?
60 by 100.
All right, yeah.
I mean, that's my house there,
so
too.
So just maybe. Bring it back to what Jim was saying about pruning and how important it is to prune your trees or to prune your grapevines. Once you're really stacking a lot of plants together in a small space, then you need to really be concerned about airflow and fungal diseases that can happen if we don't concern ourselves with the airflow in our landscape. I think it's really important to do a thorough site analysis of where you live so that you can figure out the right microclimates for growing the things that you want. Now's a great time for people to start thinking about what they want to grow and identifying what those places are. In permaculture, we often do what's called a sector analysis, where we look at the off-site influences to our site and identify you know, where is the cold wind going to be a limiting factor on our plants? Or where are plants exposed? Where are plants even exposed to community, people who might walk by and steal your fruit? What are you going to put there? Mm-hmm. Or maybe you want to grow some white tomatoes instead of some red tomatoes so that people don't take them. Where you might be exposed to wildlife. So all of those are important factors in small spaces. Grapes are a great thing in small spaces because you can trellis them up. We actually have two varieties of table grapes right now at my house, and then we're looking to get our wine grapes growing up on the roof. We have we just put on a large green roof on our whole house, and that's really increased the microclimates that we can use to grow things.
Will the grapes be planted in the ground and then trellis up to your roof?
Yeah.
Or? Not planted on the roof.
No, planted in the ground and trellised up to the roof. And so then they'll provide shade on the roof as well over the balcony that we put up there.
Okay. And describe some techniques that you would use to cram more plants in.
Well, I'd look at different layers. So thinking about... what could take up the ground cover layer in my landscape, as well as like the shrub layer and the tree layer. So by stacking plants together, sometimes we call it stadium seeding. By stacking plants together, you can put more things in. I look at different types of plants, how to do companion planting. So I'm planting things that are different and can support each other together. I grow some plants for mulch, for helping with building our soil. Composting is really important in the city. It's often hard to find clean nutrients when you don't have a lot of space for doing composting. So to have an active compost pile and a way to get good nutrients is important.
That's very important when you're there's more demand on the soil because you've got more plants in there to be replenishing them.
Yeah, you're always needing to add more compost. We have rabbits that we use their manure mm-hmm. in the landscape, which is a really great animal for urban spaces. They're quiet. The manure can be used fresh on the garden, so you don't need to compost it as you would chicken manure, which then takes another space in your landscape.
Just don't let them escape.
Right. Well, we actually put our male rabbit on the roof, and we let him run around up there. And so he's the mobile fertility for the rooftop garden, and he gets to eat cute. The clover and keep it in check.
Great.
All the vegetables up there are in raised beds over the load-bearing wall, so that's why the rabbit doesn't get to the vegetables. But of the it's kind of our Oregon desert up there on our roof in the summer, so we're selecting for what's actually going to survive in these really hot summers.
And well, that's a good stopping point for us here. We're out of time, unfortunately, but it's, not kind of what I want to grow, but what grows best here. And then you'll enjoy that too.
Yeah, that's
I don't grow melons anymore just because I don't want to do what it needs to do.
You need a roof. They did really well on the roof.
Yeah. It's either my solar panels or a garden up there. Right. And they got solar panels. So
we got it both. but variety selection is important when you're trying to grow a lot of food.
Okay, we're out of time. Marisha Auerbach, thank you very much for coming by and sharing your knowledge.
And
same with you, Jim.
Yep, nice seeing you again.
We'll be back in a month. That's my story so far.
I got a space.